Support for WPR comes from All Energy Solar, designing and installing commercial and residential solar arrays to power homes and businesses with the sun. Solar energy is a renewable energy source. AllEnergySolar.com.
Wisconsin Public Radio brings you thoughtful and engaging discussions every day. Authors, artists, politicians, and voices from around the state. You'll hear them all. And you can be part of the conversation, too, on air or online at WPR.org.
Thanks for listening along on WPR. We're talking about facing burnout at your job on the show today, to begin it at least. Larry Mueller here, and our guest, Dr. Shyla Merghain. She's a distinguished psychologist in the Department of Orthopedics and Rehabilitation at UW-Madison School of Medicine and Public Health. Been with us many a time. Are you worried you might have burnout and not sure what to do? Maybe you're looking for answers on what you can do to get your energy and your motivation back. We'll take your general mental health questions as well. Give us a call. The number's 800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to ideas@WPR.org. Dr. Shyla Merghain, good to have you back.
All right. Thank you for having me, Larry.
Well,
great
it's
to be here.
Well, it's great to have you with us once again, and a topic that may not be the most fun one to talk about sometime, but burnout is certainly there. I have some friends who I think may be suffering burnout, one in particular. How do you recognize burnout, and how's it different from just regular old stress?
That's a great question, Larry. And I think the workforce is often feeling tired, where at times in our career, we can encounter burnout. It is quite normal for people as they're progressing through their years in the workforce to reach a time where they just feel burned out. And stress is certainly related to job burnout, but I think about stress as being a discrete period of time where maybe you're working on a project with a tight deadline and having to put in those hours. But once those factors are taken away, you go back to normal. While burnout is really a sense of just feeling worn out physically and emotionally. And what can make job burnout so challenging is that it usually involves feelings of feeling powerless or useless or even empty. And it can raise the risk for depression. So I want to talk today about what causes burnout, but also what the remedy is for burnout if and when it happens.
Yeah, it's good to know both parts for sure. Well, so the cause of burnout then is?
I think it can be a couple things. I think being in a job where you don't feel valued for your work, where you're not enjoying what you're doing, maybe where you feel like you're letting your boss down or you're surrounded with more negative coworkers. I think those can be some of those triggers or risk factors for burnout. I think sometimes we can look at being in an environment where there's just an intensity and fast pace for too long of a period of time, and you're not getting that downtime that you need. So working in a really intense environment for a long time. And I think then we also can look at other factors outside of work. Like if you find yourself dealing with some life challenges, and maybe it's an illness in the family, or maybe you're an empty nester, or your children are going through something challenging. I think that can be a contributor to burnout, where you feel like you just don't have the resources that you used to deal with work-related stressors. You're kind of coming in a sense, half empty, because so much of your resources are spent in things outside of work. And then certainly there are psychological risk factors, like if you are struggling with a mental health condition like depression, or maybe you've had past work experiences that have been really challenging, that could be some of those certain personality characteristics that can affect the risk of burnout.
I'm wondering, do you think it's more common than it used to be, or maybe we're just more aware of it?
I think it can be more common. You know, gone are the days of people working for one organization for your entire career surrounded by coworkers that become like family. Mm-hmm. I also think the work world is consistently changing with advances in technology or AI, and they can be hard to keep up with. And plus, there is a hybrid that many people are working remotely and in person. And I think what is missing is some of that social connection, the chit-chat over in the break room, over the coffee dispenser, that can leave people feeling more isolated and lonely, and sitting in front of a screen for more hours dealing with complex issues that can take a lot. It can be draining. And as a result, people can start to feel more burned out.
Yeah, or even just not being in the workplace.
Yes. Yeah.
You
know, I mean, there's so many.
Doing this all from your house.
Yep, where you don't have that distinct break between, driving to work, getting out, going to your desk. If you're working from home, in a sense, work can bleed over into the evening hours, or it could be the first thing you're checking when you wake up. And so you never get kind of that detachment from work. And then you also don't have those, what I call micro boosts, that you get from just the chit chat with your coworkers, like, hey, how was your weekend? Or, hey, let's take a walk over the lunch hour. I think that doesn't give you that little recharge that often we need during a work day.
I know you have some tips on how to handle job burnout, and you mentioned detaching psychologically from work.
Yeah. So, you know, I do want to also just mention, like, for people to identify, gosh, when am I burning out? Because I think early intervention is key, that if you find yourself dragging yourself to work, or you're having trouble getting started, or you feel more irritable, or you feel just totally detached from work, like you're going through the motion, or maybe you're lacking energy, or it's hard to just focus on what you're doing and concentrating, or maybe you're having a lot, you're losing confidence and doubting yourself, or even some physical complaints, or maybe your sleep isn't as good as it used to, and you're waking up again in the middle of the night feeling that dread, or you're using food or drug or alcohol to numb yourself. And then to your question, you know, it's so important of detaching from work. Again, I think in our modern work world, we can feel connected at the hip to our job. First thing we check in the morning is our email, you know, our work email, or when we go to bed at night or in the evening after dinner with our family, we might check that work email and feel that call to respond. Or many people feel like in the weekends they're still working. So it is so important for long-term well-being, and especially if we're starting to get into that burnout, to detach. And we know detachment leads to just better recovery from work-related stress, and it improves even our work product, our performance and engagement at work. And sometimes we feel like, gosh, I just need to spend more hours at work to lead to better performance. But if I work with athletes, and we find the secret sauce to athletic performance is rest and recovery. And the same is true for work performance as well.
Yeah. John in Madison has something for us. Let's go there. Hi, John.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I wonder what I feel like there's a role for lowering the amount of hours one needs to work and increasing the amount of pay. I mean, the idea was initially to have 8 hours for work, 8 hours for sleep, and 8 hours for what you will. However, that what you will is often taken up by our commute to work and eroded by, like, other basic taking care of ourselves activities. I feel like having less than 8 hours of work a day might actually be better. I mean, working from home helps with that, but sometimes that's not always the best thing for everybody, too.
Yeah. Comment, Shyla?
Absolutely. And I think some companies are going to a 4-day work week, or in summers having maybe that Friday off. And I think companies that have experimented with some of that flexibility in the workday, even some companies allow you to work the hours that you want to. We actually find that there's still great productivity. And I think, John, you're so right that just being able to have those longer breaks from work are really, really important. And I think, you know, we're talking about detaching from work, but I think, again, we have this compulsion to maybe check our phone and check in on work during those off hours. And research shows, and I think this is really striking, Larry, that research shows that even thinking about work detracts from your ability to recover it. And the mere presence of your phone distracts you and leaves you feeling unable to detach from the office. So we're talking about physical detachment, like getting away from work, getting away from your desk or computer, but also psychologically, like maybe you don't talk about work in the evening with your spouse, or maybe you choose not to check your data, your work email at bedtime or in the when you first wake up. So you can give yourself that break.
Micro breaks. You talk about taking micro breaks during the day. What's an example of a micro break?
Absolutely. So a micro break is, it could be a couple things. So we think about, let's say traditionally we're working for 8 hours, that if we can take like a 10-minute work break during the workday, that research again shows is surprisingly effective for recovering from work stress and various job demands. So this could be, again, that chit-chat over the coffee pot at the work workstation, work break room, so some of those social interactions. It could be doing some meditation. It could be taking a short walk, or even just something like maybe you bring a book and you're reading it, or reading the latest sports article, or maybe you're even bringing in a craft, like doing some knitting during the workday. And what this finds is that it can really help keep our mood up and sustain that energy. And just taking that break can improve motivation and concentration. And then it's always good to take a longer break. So take that lunch hour. There was one study that looked at what people did during their lunch hour. And those extroverted colleagues found it wonderful to have that lunch break with coworkers and chat and talk about things outside of work. So just chat about families or what you did on the weekend or your evening. But they found that those people who are a little more introverted and when they ate, had that lunch break with colleagues, found that their energy level was depleted, more depleted by the end of the day. So just encouraging people to take the lunch break, but also be mindful around how you utilize that time. If you're a little more introverted, our weather's getting warmer, maybe it's nice to just get outside and take a brief walk. Or again, maybe you're bringing a book and reading it. But sometimes we feel like, gosh, if I just work through the lunch hour, I'll get done earlier. But we actually find more mistakes can be made. We lose focus. We feel more drained versus taking that time just to recharge. We end the day more productive, more accomplished. And again, energy and vitality a little more stabilized.
John and Madison, thank you so much. Let's turn to Chelsea in Hartford. Hi, Chelsea.
Hi. I have a question about not so much burnout in the workplace, but at home. My husband and I both, we work 8-hour days, 5 days a week, and we both have the energy, like right when we get home, he gets home earlier than I do, and I get home later, and I have a commute, but we get home, and I'm right away cooking dinner, he's right away getting things ready for the family, and all this stuff, and then all of a sudden it's like, oh my gosh, we still have 8 loads of laundry to do, or dishes, or like just tidying up, or we have to fix this or do that. And I find in the last few months, my husband and I both have felt that burnout sensation towards our home chores, not so much during our work day, but it's just that transition of we cooked, we cleaned up from dinner, but now we have our deeper cleaning, our deeper duties to do that. And it's like, oh, no, I just want to sit down and take a break.
I can relate to that. What do you think, Shyla?
Yeah, I can relate to that as well, Chelsea. And I was actually thinking about that as I was preparing for today, that we're talking about work burnout, but there can be burnout just from life burnout or chore burnout, or I was even thinking kids can experience some social burnout from some of the social pressures. And I think, Chelsea, you're really describing what it's like in modern living. You work an entire day and then you come home and there are like too many chores to keep up with. Like cleaning the house can feel like there's less time available to deal with everything that's coming in the house. And how do you get it all done? And, you know, I think it allows us to think about a couple things. Like, one, can we simplify any of the tasks? For example, maybe picking up our groceries, you know, ordering them and doing the drive up and picking them up the way so we save an hour from grocery shopping. You know, can we, I don't know, use kind of utensils that maybe save time with washing and maybe using some disposable utensils or paper plates or things like that. So sometimes there are some life hacks, but again, I want to normalize that this can happen, right? I think it's happened to so many of us. And what at the heart of it is information that we need to find better balance. So if we're just working all day, and sometimes people call the home chores like a second shift that we have to come and do, and then we fall asleep exhausted. It's, again, it's information to give ourselves permission to rebalance. So thinking about using the same principles, like how do you detach from some of the chores and do something fun? Like the laundry will wait, the dusting will wait, right? No one's died from a little dust on the table. And maybe you and your husband give yourself permission just to take a walk when you get home, or plan a date night, or schedule something that you would really enjoy, like going to trivia night or seeing a show or going out to the movie theater or even just having a TV show series you look forward to watching. So again, something that will recharge and reinvigorate. And so sometimes that requires a little bit of shifting the flow and how we're doing things, but also maybe a little planning and preparation so we're not missing the good stuff, the things that really uplift us. And I think that's really important with families and children, too, because kids often can feel a bit burned out, especially from the social pressures as they age. And it's so important to think about helping them recharge as well.
Chelsea, thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. Our guest today, Dr. Shyla Mergane, distinguished psychologist in the Department of Orthopedics and Rehabilitation at UW-Madison School of Medicine and Public Health, as we talk about handling burnout at work, but it looks like other places as well. You can join in with your own questions or experience. The number is 800-642-1234. Email to ideas@wpr.org. Clara Neipert's our producer today, our technical director, Tyler Ditter. I'm Larry Mueller for Wisconsin Public Radio. Taking a look at how to handle burnout at work or other places as well with our guest, Dr. Shyla Mergane of the UW-Madison School of Medicine and Public Health. Questions or experience to share, give a call, 800-642-1234, or email to ideas@wpr.org. Sue emailed us, could you comment on the possibility of burnout in retirement? As an active retiree, everyone thinks people like me have all the time in the world, so we are expected to volunteer for everything. Retirees need balance in their lives, too, to work with their aging process.
So thank you for bringing that up. I think that's such an important just a reflection around retirement and what is a good balance. I think burnout can happen because sometimes in retirement, people don't have enough to do. They've lost that sense of purpose and meaning with their jobs and are struggling, just feeling like they're going through a daily grind, going through the motions, and there isn't enough, in a sense, stimulation and excitement. And as you're saying, Sue, sometimes on the other side, we can get ourselves feeling like we're working 150% with all the causes and volunteers and clubs and social events, and there's no time just to breathe and be. And so finding, again, that balance, and making sure we're prioritizing what's most important, how we do want to spend that time. We do know in retirement, we can either stagnate or a concept called generativity, where we do feel revitalized and like we do have a mission and there is some purpose. So think of a person stagnating, that's probably good to schedule some more exciting activities. We do know that we talked about rest and recharge, like, okay, do some meditation or maybe do some reading a book, more kind of slower restorative practices. But we do know actually for recharging and a prescription for burnout is to engage in more effortful activities, like things like getting out and exercising. It can be good, like doing a yoga class or taking that hike, or maybe you're doing pickleball in retirement or going for a swim, or maybe you're also just engaging, learning a new hobby that's stretching you a little bit, like you're taking up a language or you're learning an instrument, or you're taking classes to hone a craft or skill set you have. And as you said, Sue, we also want to be aware of what we're committing to, so we're not depleting ourselves by getting stretched too thin. So sometimes that requires saying no to some things and saying yes to what you really want to be doing with your time. Good. And I think that's so important.
Yeah, very, very good points. Diane and Nina has something for us. Hi, Diane.
Well, hello, Larry. Thank you for taking my call. I was listening. I'm in the car. Mm-hmm. Pulled over. My son, I put too many hours in my job. And my son, when he was grown, he looked at me and he said, Mom, do you want to work to live or live to work? And I thought that was really like, ooh, the bells went off for me. And I wish I had heard that earlier in my career, because the expectations were way too high and I bought into them. And you can't get the time back. You know, your life goes so quickly. And I just thought that was a really good comment.
Yeah. Diane, thanks for calling. Comment, Shyla.
Oh, Diane, I love that. That living to work and not buying into the maybe larger culture here in the United States or Wisconsin, you know, just kind of the working to live. And I think you're right. I think sometimes it takes, we have to give ourselves permission to do it differently, to set that boundary with work. I know one of my colleagues, it was so inspiring to see that during his residency, every day he left at around 5 or 5:30 so he could have dinner with his family. And that was just a boundary he set to begin with. Or I've seen people in workplaces say, I'm not going to check email on the weekend or after whatever time in the evening. And that's just a boundary they set because their family is a priority. So, Diane, I think you're really giving people permission to reflect on, in this life we're living, right? People always say everyone's replaceable on one's deathbed, right? That if with this life we're living, what's most important? How do we want to spend our time? Even thinking in the next year, like what would we be really glad that we said yes to? And maybe what are some things that it's time for us to say no to, so we're showing up for what matters most.
Thank you very much, Diane, for pulling over with your car and calling in. Appreciate it. You can do that, too. Number to call, 800-642-1234, or you can email us, the email address, ideas@WPR.org. Let's say you need to talk to your boss. How do you start a conversation with your employer about the fact that you're suffering burnout?
I think that's a great question, Larry, because we're talking about setting boundaries or maybe being a little assertive or renegotiating with your boss or your work team to see what changes can occur. And I think it takes a bit of courage and vulnerability. And some bosses will be receptive, some aren't. So I want to encourage people to read the room, so to speak, or know how the conversation is going to go. Because sometimes there are just changes we can make on our own. And then sometimes it is reasonable and actually very fruitful to have a conversation, a frank conversation with our boss. And I think one, kind of naming what's going on, that you're finding yourself maybe being in a place where you are feeling burned out, and then having a conversation with your boss, negotiating for change. Like, can there be projects you can delegate to somebody else, or you can get help with, or maybe you can change the deadline. Or we've talked about maybe setting that boundary around work hours, that, you know, you're not going to check the email after hours. Or I also like to say, maybe I've had people do this, that they say to their boss, I'm going to just build in some breaks. I had somebody meditating and the boss thought that person was napping. And he said, no, I'm meditating. So even just saying, you know, I'm going to take a couple micro breaks and I'm going to take that lunch hour. So that's just going to be that kind of self-care. So I think, and hearing what the boss has to say as well.
Yeah. Well, we think about burnout as a kind of a personal problem. In other words, we tend to think that people who suffer from burnout might not just be as mentally resilient or might not be able to deal with stress as well as other people can. But how much responsibility do our employers have in managing burnout?
Yeah, great point. Right. And I want to normalize that. I think almost everyone at a particular time in their career will experience burnout. So I actually think it's part of what a coworker calls like the hero or heroine's journey in the workforce, that, you know, there's the initial stage of your career, you're excited and maybe you have mentoring, but then you might encounter some trials and tribulations and starting to burn out, and then hopefully rounding the corner, rounding the bend to that kind of recovery, and maybe even a renewed sense of purpose. And I do think, right, our workplaces, even management, leadership, bosses, it really pays for them to understand the causes to burnout and the remedies, and have conversations during the annual review with their employees around, how are you doing? What kind of improvements can you make? We just did that at UW Health with my boss. She asked, did a survey, and we had conversations in our team around what would be helpful in terms of preventing burnout. And she decided to make the mandatory meetings not mandatory, to allow people some flexibility around when they attended or not attended. So I think sometimes there are more possibilities than we realize, but it's good for managers to have a pulse and to maybe shift things up around how things are done, or give people, I think, flexibility. I think if you feel a little free and have that flexibility in the workplace, then you have permission to do a little bit of self-care.
Yeah. You know, just thinking about it, just in general, it seems that U.S. work culture makes us tend to blame individual employees and not the employer for problems like burnout.
Right. And I think it's, you know, there are institutional factors that contribute to the vulnerability to burnout. And there can be some individual factors as well. I don't think it's an either or, but a both and. And certainly, you know, Wellness Wednesdays, you know, don't solve the problem if there are larger institutional factors. But, you know, I think there was one other, I think, really important thing that I wanted to encourage people, and that is just your environment. You know, we're talking about institutional organizations or U.S. workforce, or here in Wisconsin, kind of this kind of work, go, go, go. And I wanted, especially springtime, just talk about getting out in nature. We do know a lot of companies are aware of this, and we see some newer buildings being built where there's more exposure to natural elements, like there's more natural sunlight, or there is walking paths, or bringing in nature into the office. And we do find that exposure to sunlight or daylight, having views of nature, even having artwork of nature or screens of nature, can really have benefits from recovery. So bringing in nature to your workplace, or getting out in nature during your workday, can just really revitalize you. And we find even as little as 10 minutes out in nature, people come back in to work feeling more focused, more energy, and more vitality. So maybe even a boss can have a meeting, taking a walk with a colleague, a coworker. That would do wonders, I think, for that person today.
Yeah, probably. And there are companies with high burnout rates. How difficult is it for a company with a high burnout rate to change, since, you know, these companies tend to have organizational and management problems?
Yeah, well, I think, yeah, it can be very challenging, especially if things have always been done a certain way. But, you know, I think about it as a trickle-down effect, that if leaders, managers, bosses, they need to take care of themselves and their burnout rates. They're often struggling with burnout as well, that more is coming at them than time available. But I think if there's some movement of them prioritizing their well-being, then there's a trickle down throughout all layers of the organization to encouraging others to take care of themselves. And that even just could be checking in on how the person's doing and, you know, even modeling, hey, I went for a walk over my lunch hour. What are you doing for your self-care? That can be really, really powerful.
Richard in Two Rivers, we'll give you a chance to join in. Thanks for calling.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Hey, man, I've had a lot of jobs recently, and what I found out is what some people consider a bad situation, other people consider a good situation. So when do you get to the point where you just say, you know, you got to toughen up, buttercup?
Yeah, I think you jump from the frying pan into the fire, you know, so to speak. Yeah, Richard, I think sometimes, right. I mean, I don't know if there is a perfect place of employment out there, and sometimes good enough might be good enough. And then just working on some of these strategies as well to say, you know, how do I take care of myself? And I also think having somebody who's like-minded in the workplace can be really helpful. A colleague you feel safe and you can vent with during the workday. That kind of is like a pressure cooker, releases some of that pressure valve to help during the day release some of that stress to recharge.
What can companies, or what's your advice for people who are new to a company, or maybe they're in a lower level position, or probably maybe younger? How can they learn to say no and sort of set limits?
I think that, yeah, people who are newer to the workforce or maybe new in a company, I think it can be hard at the beginning, but trying to find some mentors and maybe folks who have been there for longer to see what they're doing. Because if you see an example of something that has gone well for somebody, then you're more likely to advocate for it yourself and more likely to implement it. So mentorship, certainly early in career, is very helpful. And I would say also trying to implement it within the first 6 months of your job. Sometimes it's harder if you, for example, always work through lunch, then a year or two later deciding not to. Maybe your boss is used to you working through lunch. So trying to implement it earlier rather than later.
John emailed us. He heard of a radical idea for a progressive progressive podcast about splitting the year into 4 months for work, 4 months for vacation, and 4 months for meaningful action, like volunteering, political action, research, community organizing, anything so long as it contributes back to society in a meaningful way. The podcast called it their 4-4-4 month idea.
I love that. I love that. A year well lived, right? Travel, and even if it's a staycation, you know, traveling around your local community or Wisconsin, that was meaningful life activities, that sense of purpose with volunteering or service or contribution, and then work. And certainly we probably all, most of us can't do a literal 4-4-4, but we could divide our time throughout our week in that way. That's great.
Yeah, it's a kind of a cool idea. Well, let's get to the nub of this a little bit. How can you know if it's time to take the big step of quitting your job because of burnout?
Oh, that is a great question, Larry. And I think if you've tried everything, if you find that it's you're again dreading everything, that you know that it's no longer working for you, maybe you've tried to work with your boss, you're finding your coworkers maybe aren't that supportive, and it's maybe having just a, taking a toll on your physical and mental health, then it might be time to walk away or at least search for another job and have an exit strategy, whether you say, I'm going to transition to another job or I'm just going to simply quit. There definitely comes a place in time where that's the healthiest choice.
Buck in Sturgeon Bay will give you a chance. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I see people today being overconsumed with buying stuff. And clutter creates anxiety that spills over into your job sometimes. And we all know how many people got to have all these monthly payments, the brand new car, the big truck. But debt-free is a fantastic feeling, and then you no longer feel like you have the handcuffs on at your job, and that can help lower anxiety. Now, I'm self-employed, so I don't have to go to my boss and ask for time off or anything, but when you don't have that proverbial gun to your head to make money, you tend to look at life a little differently.
Yeah.
So I would say work for being debt-free and buy less junk and have less clutter in your life. That'll make work more fun.
Buck, thank you for calling. What do you think, Shyla?
I love it, Buck. Thank you. What a great note to highlight the simpler, right? Less consumeristic. We need less things, right? That's not what we never remember the stuff we purchased or gave to our kids. What we remember are the experiences. And so financial freedom allows us just more choice. We maybe can retire earlier. We can quit a job or choose a job that maybe we're earning less, but is more soul satisfying. And so I think great for people to work maybe with a financial planner on how do you reduce, eliminate that debt so you can have more freedom and choices in life, including maybe some shifts with your work life.
Yeah, good, very good points. And on that note, we are about out of time, Shyla. Thank you so much for taking the time to be with us today, and I'm sure we'll do this again. Thank you.
Thanks for having me, Larry. It was a real honor to be here today.
Dr. Shyla Mergane, distinguished psychologist. She resides in the Department of Orthopedics and Rehabilitation at the UW-Madison School of Medicine and Public Health. Well, how much time are your kids spending on screens or your grandkids? Screens are hard to avoid these days, and we'll take a look at that, especially as it relates to your children. That next. I'm Larry Mueller for the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.